Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the session where I'm still figuring out how to use the studio after 2 years of not using it very often. But we have an exciting day, exciting night planned for you. We've got two shows happening tonight. Not just one, but two, which I haven't done in years because I'm way too lazy to do two shows. But tonight's a special night because it's a tribute night to our friend Tasty. That'll be our second show, Tasty Tribute Show. But right now, our very first show is dedicated to just one person, one very special person, a person that I've known for years, a person that was very close to Tasty and came to town for our Tasty night. So we wanted to do a Bankhead Brewing Show with Chad Mosier. Chad, welcome back to the studio.
Good to be back, man. Feels good.
Have you been in this studio?
Yes.
Okay. Have we ever done a Bankhead show?
No, sir.
We just had you on like, oh, let's check in with Chad
type of thing.
Let's
just see what's happening, yeah.
Okay, yes. Right. Well, it's long overdue.
It feels familiar. Okay. Stuff on the walls.
Yeah.
You know,
it's probably the same microphone. It probably hasn't even been cleaned since you last used
it. Same desk.
Yeah.
I like it.
Some things are the same.
It's maintained.
Yeah. It's mostly held up. There's actually a lot of gremlins that have to be fixed still. So if you're still hearing audio problems out there in the podcast and video world, I don't know, make a donation because I can't afford new equipment for a while. It needs to be fixed. Teresa Pasuti back in the studio as my co-host, as usual, which I always feel better when you're here, Teresa.
Oh, it's the new usual, and yeah. I feel better too.
I'm glad. I'm so glad you haven't gotten sick of this show.
I just miss you when I'm not here. So
that's nice. And Bevo is here as usual, running things on the chat side and the video side for us, as usual. I was hoping Sam would be here tonight to hang out with us later, Chad.
That'd be like old times.
Right?
Yep. Or a Schumann.
Yeah. Well, so Schumann will be here later.
Oh, perfect.
For those of you who have been listening for years, Chad, of course, is my old roommate. That's how we met, became fast friends. But then Schumann, it was me, Chad, Schumann, and Sam. Holding down the fort in the old rat pad.
Good times.
But I don't know. Sam like is responsible now.
Yeah, he's at work.
He owns a business, Chad.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm excited to meet the infamous Schumann.
Oh yeah. Oh. Schumann. You will.
Hold on to your pants.
How about Jumpin' Johnny?
Jumpin' Johnny is on vacation. So unfortunately,
there's a couple of them. There's a few of them.
Yeah, there's Schumann, the oldest brother.
Uh-huh.
There's Shoe Light, the youngest brother. And then there's Shucifix, the middle brother, who's a born-again Christian. So we named him Shucifix years ago. And anyhow, Schumann will be here tonight. He's excited. So for those of you listening at home, especially if you're not in the Bay Area, it's SF Beer Week this week, and we always do different events, of course. And this year, we've started a new event called Tasty Night. And it's Tasty Night, a 21-tap salute to our fallen craft beer hero, Mike Tasty McDole. And here at the Hop Grenade, we have all of our 21 taps dedicated to Tasty. And they're either beers that he loved, brewers that he influenced or who influenced him, just any way that he's had an impact on the craft beer scene, which he had a massive impact. So we thought this is not a memorial. This is not a funeral show. We've done that. This is a tribute to our friend Tasty. So we're going to talk a lot about beer tonight. We're going to talk about it in a way that Tasty inspired it. And that'll be our second show that happened tonight. But if you are local, you still got time to get down to the Hop Grenade. The whole thing starts at 6. We're going to go until 10, and our beer list is just stellar. It's so good. I mean, you looked at it earlier.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, great lineup.
And some of the beers you've seen here before, so I'm not saying everything is this one-off, but they do all have a special part in Tasty's life. For example, Blind Pig is on tap from Russian River.
Come on.
His favorite IPA ever.
Gotta love it. Yeah. Come on. It is. I mean, who doesn't love that beer?
Is it, right.
But Tasty really loved that beer.
He really loved that beer. So
loved it.
A special night here at the Hop Grenade, and a special show coming up after this where we'll bring in all kinds of brewers that are going to pay tribute to how he influenced their brewing or talk about a collaboration they did and all of that. So hang tight for that. But like I said, this show is about my friend Chad and Bankhead Brewing Company.
Awesome.
So why don't we start with the beer in my glass, Chad?
Sure.
And then we'll learn about what you've been up to and how you got with Bankhead. What's this beer?
So we call this Low Beams. It's an American Light Lager, 3.5%, easy drinking. It's got some corn in there, so you kind of get that sweetness. But this kind of came about because we were open for a year or two, and everyone kept coming in going, oh, I just drink domestic. It's like, oh, well, that's great, because everything's domestic. Look behind that window. It's all made right there. Well, they didn't get that, right?
They're
like, well,
no,
you know, like the big three. Like, oh, okay. And they would come in, and they'd go, I need a Coors Light.
Yeah.
Oh, Coors Light. We're down in Texas. I'm like, I thought that was great.
Coors.
Like, well, let's give them a Coors Light. And so that's what this came about. We use pure Idaho Pilsner malt from Great Western and, you know, a bag of flake corn, lager it like any other lager, 48 degrees, German Bock yeast, kind of across the board on our lagers,
okay.
White Labs, and just turns out 3.5% easy drinking.
Why Bock yeast?
It's just, I don't know. I've just always been a fan since a home brewer,
that
833. Tasty was always a fan. He might have pushed me in that direction. I started doing Hellas at home, right, in the backyard, actually.
Yeah. Love your Hellas.
At the old, the old Rat Pad. And I think just Bock just does really well. It really accentuates the malt, but it'll go low. It'll finish out dry.
Okay.
If you need it to, it's a workhorse. You can beat it up. You can do a lot of different generations with it.
Okay.
Just like the character of it.
So do you do a traditional lager fermentation, or do you do the Tasty method where he used to shorten that?
So it's funny, you know, I did the Tasty method. So we kind of warmed it up right as quick as we could.
Yeah.
But now, for the last 6 years, we've been very traditional. 45 degree knockout.
Okay.
Pitch the yeast, let it free rise to 48 and keep it there for a couple weeks, and then reach up to 55 maybe in that last third week.
Okay.
And then, you know, you kind of go slow down on the crash. So very traditional. Very traditional as far as middle frew in the beer as well.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all just Hallertau middle frew.
All the way through.
Yep. It just gets a dose at 90 minutes, basically. I forget the IBUs on this guy, but it's not much, right?
That's it. One dose at 90 minutes.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah, just a little bittering.
Yep.
Bounce it out.
Yep.
This is a great beer.
It's super
it's good.
Great.
It's easy drinking.
I don't care
if
it's
my jam.
People? Like, I don't care if it's the Coors beer. I think it's great.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a fun logo, right, that kind of emulates one of those big breweries in a nice way. It's kind of more Cars, like Pixar.
Okay.
Goofy, cartoony, but
nice.
Yeah, I'm thinking you need to have like a window into the brewery, and then there's one of your fermenters just says the Big Three. Its name is the Big Three.
I like that.
There you go.
Be like, hey, we make it in the Big Three.
I like that.
So,
yeah. I like that.
It's right there.
Or it's right from
domestic tank.
Yeah.
Domestic.
I love that answer too. I only drink domestic. Perfect.
Yeah.
Made it all right here.
Right there.
I had a guy, I was setting up our patio here at the Hop Grenade, and an older guy walked by and he said, do you have any non-pasteurized beer? And I actually had to think for a second. I was like, wait a sec.
What does
that
mean?
Yeah, all of them. I was like, oh, he's like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, sorry, you caught me off guard, because I don't think I've ever been asked that. But all of our beer is non-pasteurized. Basically, if it's a craft beer, it is not pasteurized.
Easy answer. He worried about picking up a yeast infection or something?
He claimed that pasteurized beer makes him sick.
Oh.
And not like I'm like actually makes him ill, I guess. Yeah. I should say. Not like, yeah, you make me sick. But it makes him ill. He couldn't explain why.
Oh, like he just needed that little bit of probiotic, maybe.
Maybe that's what it was. And he's like, I can't drink a lot no matter what, but if I have two pasteurized beer, I become quite ill. Or if I have two unpasteurized, he clearly doesn't know what craft beer is either, by the way, because it's unpasteurized. He was really old school. He's like, because I could drink like imports, you know, and I'm like, okay, here we go. here we are.
That's awesome.
I mean, it makes me wonder, like, does he eat cheese? Does he drink milk? Like, what's going on in his life?
I don't know. He was already weird, so I didn't ask more questions.
That's fair.
I didn't want to get, you know me, I'm like, I don't need to know about your life.
Yeah, that's just too much information already.
Yeah. Anyway, I do like your answer. Of course it's all domestic.
It's all domestic. It's right there.
Now, did you switch to the traditional lager method, like, because you had the capacity to do so, or did you end up just really liking that for the beer?
So I think just liking it with the beer, right? Okay. Trials. But also, we're a brew pub, right? So we're not production. We're not trying to crank it out. We can take a little time. I'm not learning that now since we're busier.
Okay.
And people really gravitate towards our Mexican lager, which I can go through a tank in about a month, which is kind of a problem, right?
Yeah.
But no, I think it just, really like the character on that, low and slow, like good Texas barbecue, low and slow, right?
Yeah,
when they're smoking meat, kind of works. But I'm learning, even these yeast vendors are telling you to kind of warm it up at first and then kind of bring it down to that temperature you want. Just better results, quicker kickoff. Because we do have some lag time, right? So a couple days of lag, you know, not getting that yeast going, that's going to slow down a production brewer, right? That's going to slow down somebody that needs to put a lager out quick.
Okay.
And i.e. us, right? Like if we need to get it out a little quicker, save a week, you know, maybe you do need to warm it up. But I don't know if I'm going to jump in that boat yet, but I think I'm slowly warming them up, you know, instead of like 48 going to 50, maybe 52.
Okay.
And trying to crank it up quicker towards the end.
I see. Well, don't mess with it yet. It tastes great.
Not bad, huh?
No, it's very good.
Just add a couple more tanks, right?
There you go.
That's it. More fermenters.
Well, and that gets me to, I do want to learn about Bankhead. Let's just talk a little bit about how you got to where you are.
Sure.
So you left the Bay Area back in what?
2015.
Okay. So 7 years ago now, you made your wife got a job in Texas.
I said, hell no, I'm not going to Texas.
But now you love it.
It was pretty cool.
You love Texas,
like,
don't
it
you?
Had a good beer scene, had to go fly down and make sure.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. And we've been really happy.
I love Texas too, by the way. Yeah. I spent a bunch of time there on a recent trip, mostly in the southern, like, Austin area.
It was great. I was there this weekend. Yeah.
Dude, really like Texas.
Yeah, it's
cool. Not afraid to admit.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you start work at Bankhead immediately when you got there?
Immediately. So basically, well, within a year. So I was a stay-at-home dad for about 10 months, right, moving there. So my wife got her feet under her new position. I was at home with Adeline, our firstborn, the seven-year-old now.
Yeah.
And basically linked up with a Brewing Network listener.
Oh.
In Texas. And we actually met him when you were the keynote. Out at the Blue Bonnet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And anyway, stayed in touch. So when we talked, I said, oh, we're really serious about moving out here. And I reached out to him, and he goes, well, we're doing a brewery, and what do you think about maybe coming to work for me? And I said, well, that'd be awesome.
Nice.
And at the time, my wife and I were looking to build a home. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, it was right down the street from where he was building a brewery.
Wow.
So it just worked out.
Okay.
Like, it was like, no way, this is too good to be true.
That's too good to be
that
true.
Is
minutes,
so like, too good to
how
be
did
true.
That happen? And the DFW area is a big area, right?
So, yeah. You're near Dallas, Fort Worth.
Yeah,
that's
Dallas, Fort Worth. Okay. Yeah. We're in a town called Rowlett.
That is a big old area.
It is.
That's the town your house is in, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So hop, skip, and a jump from the brewery. Just worked out really well and kind of brewed under him, with him, I guess. You know, I had some commercial experience, and he was more a home brewer, but really excited, really smart about, you know, doing recipes. And the brew house is awesome. JV Northwest, 15 barrel. Everything works really well.
It was new?
Brand new.
Yeah.
Got
is it still your brew house now?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Well, seven years isn't that long for a brew house, right?
No,
so, yeah.
No, I mean, it's going to outlive us, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
but no, it's great. It's a great little brew house. Got lucky meeting him, and he kind of sold his shares. He's been out, and so I've been doing it probably the last 2.5, almost 3 years, just me.
As the brewmaster.
Yep. Yep.
And you guys have two locations.
Yes, we just opened our second location in Fort Worth, downtown Fort Worth in the Cultural District. It was a previous brewery that had, it was a brew pub, so it has a kitchen. So both locations have a kitchen. We do wood-fired pizzas. Everything comes out of those.
Nice.
But now we moved into this five-barrel facility that was a previous big beer company in the Dallas area.
Okay.
And been brewing on that. So it's kind of like our new pilot.
Okay.
And then, you know, if I like something, I can kind of do it up on the 15-barrel. But it's interesting, in Texas, the liquor laws are such where I can't transfer beer from place to place because we have full liquor.
Oh.
If we did not have the cocktails or the full liquor,
yeah,
all day, right? No problem.
But right.
We can't transfer from the 15-barrel to the 5, so I'm doing a lot of practice on the 5.
Wow.
Which, a lot of brewing, right, if you're busy.
Yeah.
So can, yeah, but can full you liquor. Not even sell it to yourself?
Through a distributor.
Oh, through a distributor.
So sell it to a distributor,
so
they sell it back to you.
It's weird. I hope it changes. So
so each location has unique beers.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Or at least brewed at that location.
Right.
This
first year, we've kind of like, okay, let's try to have the same beers.
Yeah.
Because that's what people like. Let's have the same food menu. Now we're starting to like, okay, let's just get a little more fancy or
right.
Let's try something new. And like, hey, he's like, brew whatever I want, right? Like, go crazy at the smaller facility.
Yeah.
I mean, I have carte blanche everywhere, but I mean, there's so many beers that people like to have on tap. It's hard to kind of make new beers and rotate them in without everybody getting upset, you know. And
how
and
many
I realize,
beers do you typically have on?
I mean, anywhere from like 16 to 19.
Oh my God, that's too like many beers, Chad.
Almost 16. But like half the lineup's lagers, right? Like,
okay.
And oh, as soon yeah. as, I, and then the problem was we made t-shirts.
Okay.
So logos. Oh. Now these beers have a life.
Yeah.
And right. so you don't have the beer that they're wearing the shirt for, they get angry.
Oh my gosh.
You know,
good problem.
Actually, it is a good problem because out here we have too many customers that always want something new. Like they never want the same thing. They always want something new. And we kind of buck that trend a little bit because we do a lot of things that tend to live on. So
sure.
I'm fine with that. But like your customers should talk to California customers. Be like, it's okay to have the same beer twice.
Right. Yeah,
you know, like right. it's okay to really like have a beer that's your beer,
right?
You know,
and I think you know our number one seller is a Mexican lager style, and that's just kind of what I brew a lot of.
I love that style.
So though. Cool.
Yeah, it's great.
If you're gonna have one, I'm all right with that one.
Yeah, we can try that next, actually.
Yeah, let's do that. I'd love to try it.
But yeah, it's a great brew house. It was a great start, and yeah, just full speed ahead. Now yeah. we got a second location. We're talking about doing more. I hope.
Yeah.
It seems like the brew pub concept really works, right? So food, beer, keep people there. We love it. I love talking to you know customers firsthand, right? Going out and having a beer and just going down the line of the bar and talking to everybody.
Yeah.
And it's great. Everyone's enjoying food. Everyone's enjoying beer. We have a nice big patio. It's great.
Well, grab us that Mexican lager yeah. so we can pour that. But that was always you, Chad. That's why you worked great at the Brewing Network. You were the social one. When this microphone's off, leave me the fuck alone. But Chad would be out there talking and social, just like Tasty. You know, that's why you guys got along well, too.
He'd always say, just put yourself out there, right? If
yeah.
you don't, there's no opportunities, right? Like, yeah. you got to put yourself out there.
For sure. Yeah. And then I did just want to say, like, yeah, with the full liquor license and not being able to move beer around, I got to say, though, I'll take that full liquor license any day. That's where your money's at.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, the margins on beer is good. We all know that. But it is way better on
liquor.
It'll
balance the books on liquor, for sure.
Yeah. If you're having trouble,
if you're in a downtrend,
have cocktail night, and it's going to go well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's fun, right? Like, you're kind of everything to everyone, which is good and bad. But we don't turn away groups, right? And I think I remember Sully talking about this back in the day when they didn't have liquor, right, at their brew pub.
Right.
And they said,
at first.
A group of eight people would come in, and six of them wanted cocktails, two wanted beer. They're not staying.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That always rings in my head whenever I talk about it.
No,
that's
it's true.
Conversation, but,
we talked about it here at Opening the Hop Grenade, but we, you know, Kevin and I were both so adverse to the amount of work that it would require and a knowledge that we didn't have. This was a labor of love for us, which is selling great beer. But, look. I'll tell you what, I'd have a lot more money in my pocket had I done full liquor.
Right. You know? Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Like, that's just honesty.
Yeah.
Do you think that changes clientele, though? Like, when you do have that,
it
becomes, like, more of a party scene. And, I mean, trust me, Crooked Lane could use a few more customers, too. So,
right.
You know, sometimes we have thought about that. And, you know, if we add a kitchen, we could add this. And
so I think the kitchen helps kind of keep that in check a little bit. And not staying open past 11. Nothing good happens after that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would beg to differ.
Right. You're the guest we're looking to avoid, Bebo.
Yes.
No, I'm
yes.
not. My friends and my husband are the guests. I will silently get obliterated.
Yeah.
And I think that's the model, right? Like, try to get your you know, whatever you can during that time period, that 6 to 11 o'clock hour, and then nothing good. You don't want to turn into a bar, especially if you're a brewery. So that's too, right? Like, you know, you talk to a lot of brewers, and like, well, I'm not doing cocktails. Like, we're a brewery. But it says brewery. Why are we doing wine and this? It's like, well, listen, like, you know, it's not about you all the time.
And I also think that kind of, and I've seen myself doing this, that sort of strict outlook on the business you're creating has started to evolve. And the pandemic has certainly perpetuated that and advanced that. But even, you know, when times aren't all great, you start to be less strict about everything, right? Sure. So I had a lot of rules like that too. Some of them I've stuck to, like I still don't believe in happy hour, for example.
Sure.
And an old publican taught me that, like, hey, our craft beer is so good that we don't discount it, man. That it's like a slight on the beer. And that's like a rule I've stuck to. Like, why am I going to sell it to you for half price on this hour and full price the next hour? It doesn't really make a lot of sense. Would I potentially have a nice, busy happy hour if I did it? Probably so. But it's a principle that I care about the product enough, right? But then there's other rules that I was strict on. Like, maybe if I was strict on the hey, we're a beer place, not a liquor place. Well, when times go to shit and you realize, or even just as you realize generations and customers diversify, you got to be willing to diversify too.
Absolutely.
You can't ride that boat to your death. You know, and that's, so I do feel like even I've had some changes of mind about this. No, we're just craft beer, you know.
Right. I mean, look at, you know, I'm sure Vinny probably never wanted to do a hazy IPA. Lagunitas probably never wanted to put anything in a can.
Right.
I think that, or be owned by Heineken. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm just, you know, you go through this stuff and like, yeah,
for sure.
Change happens.
Yeah.
And life happens.
Yeah. It was easier for all of us in the beginning to be so hardcore because we were fighting the good fight, right? And I'm not saying that you have to give up the fight of independent brewing, right, or independent brewers, but it definitely becomes less advantageous as time goes on to just be like, no, we are this one thing. Now, there's plenty of brewers who are so good and so popular that they still get to be one thing, right?
True.
Lucky you. Like, good for you. Right?
On it. Yeah,
yeah, but it's always a choice. I mean, maybe you would rise to meteoric fame more quickly if you chose to do a different set of beers.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think everybody kind of asks themselves, like, what gives them joy about what they're doing? And there's just some beers that I wouldn't have joy making. So I don't feel too bad that we haven't had that amount of success if we did all those beers.
Sure.
I mean, okay, I don't know that we would have, but...
Okay, and that I get, mm-hmm. and understand, and I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
But you also enjoy money in your bank account. So you won't say no to everything, is my point, right? Like, it doesn't mean you won't like, all right, well, maybe I better put out a hard seltzer.
Well...
Because you still enjoy being able to afford...
And we do the hell out of seltzers.
There we go.
We do guilty. A lot of seltzers.
And you do. I was going to ask if you do one too,
guilty.
Chad. Yeah, okay.
But you know what? We make a seltzer that I think is better than a lot of other people's seltzers.
Okay.
Like, I don't feel bad about it because, like, I will take that seltzer and put it in a glass of ice and just enjoy the hell out of that thing. Like, it's, to me, it's good. So I'm okay with it. I've turned that to the dark side there.
Yeah.
That's my sacrifice that I'm making so I don't have wine, I don't have cocktails.
But that's my point. So there are some compromises.
Yes.
Yeah. Because
absolutely.
We all have to agree that we also like money.
Yeah. I mean, it's a $1 billion market for some reason.
Yeah.
Why not, right?
Exactly.
Get into the seltzer
and
bit.
Like, mean, why? And even when people come, it would just break my heart when people come in and they're just like, oh, I don't drink beer at all. And I don't ever want to drink beer. And you're like, oh, sorry. That's what we do here.
Right.
It's gluten-free.
But now it's like, now you have a seltzer.
No carbs, right?
They're all
no
about
carbs.
That.
Yeah. So we always have a cider on tap here.
Sure.
That's our answer to that. And we do seltzers in cans. Yes,
I was
Beaver.
Just going to say, as somebody who works in this industry, but I don't necessarily drink a lot of beer,
mm-hmm.
and the beer that I would drink, like this light lager, you don't see very often, or at least you don't see it done really well very often.
Yep.
I would much rather enjoy a seltzer from you than... buying a box of Truly.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Agreed. And I don't, by the way, I don't think it's the dark side. It's actually kind of exactly to my point that this sort of hard line can't really be kept anymore. We don't have that luxury and we just, And also, like I said, if you pay attention to just customers evolving, it's a dick move. You're not only shooting yourself in the foot, but don't be a dick about it. Like, if people like something, that's okay.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. We don't need to shame our customers into only enjoying a certain type of beer or, you know, whatever we're making. Oh, you have to get on board.
Right.
Yeah. But like I said, we had that luxury in the beginning. You know, we could be like, because there was nothing but new customers to gain. You know, when craft beer had a 1% market share, you had nothing but win. You just keep driving home IPA. You don't like this? Fuck off. You know, like, it worked.
Absolutely.
Right? You're on our team or you're out of here. Well, that shit changes.
So that's been a fun progression, too, is that person walking in and saying, hey, I want that Coors Light. They're drinking double IPA. They're drinking Belgian triple.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome to watch.
I love that
over
jump,
the years,
too.
You know? You're like, who is this person?
Okay, but specifically that particular jump I've watched happen over the year. Like, what happened to the middle? Like, people, a lot of light beer drinkers did, if it's, okay, so like, light flavor, all about it. Middle flavor, I don't know, it's too bitter, it's too this, it's too that. But then you go to like a Belgian with a ton of other different esters and they're like, oh yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah.
Just like, what happened to the middle?
Yeah. They just realized that 9-10% ABV, they're just like, oh, now I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always the question, right? What's your lightest, what's your strongest or darkest?
Right.
Yeah, they associate dark with strong and light with light alcohol, I guess. I don't know. It's just funny.
Well, now, and I don't want to go into this conversation, but we don't get that one as much anymore.
Okay.
Well, first
that was
of
always
all,
a big one, right?
We don't it all the time. Then it was how many IBUs. We don't ever get that question anymore. We never get the IBU. Now we get what's your haziest.
Ah,
that's our
your haziest.
Yeah,
interesting.
This is the West Coast, man.
Okay,
bunch of trendy fucks.
We're all in. So, yeah.
But then on the opposite side of that, they're like, I need to know which is the clear beer. And here it's not hard to figure out because you will label things.
We try. If the brewer labels it, we will.
Oh,
it's still my pet peeve when a brewer doesn't label it. But
yeah, you need to. I mean, me as a beer person, like, I need to understand what I'm getting, and I will be distressed if
that's
you hand
fair.
Me a hazy IPA and I didn't know it was going to be hazy.
That's fair.
I'll drink it.
Yeah, and that's not part of, just to be clear, especially if everybody's sick of hearing this is not part of the hazy versus clear debate.
Yeah.
This is a debate about what am I buying?
Exactly. Sure. You have to have a clue what's going to end up in your hand.
Buyer beware.
Half of taste is the expectation being met. Like, just quality is like you had an expectation, it was met, and you're like, this is the best thing ever. Like, if you gave us this beer and said, I'm not going to tell you what it is, and we're tasting it, and it's American Light Lager, and we're like, okay,
yeah,
this tastes like nothing. But we were expecting American Light Lager, and we're like, oh, it's so
right. Then it's perfect, yeah.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to have to judge it, like blind judging.
We
like,
don't have
just
to
give me a little...
Yeah,
info.
Give me to the neighborhood, and then I'll decide which house I like. Yeah. You know,
don't give me chicken sandwich when I order a BLT. I know the taste of bacon.
Exactly.
You just summed it up.
Don't give me chicken nuggets when I'm a vegan.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. Before we have to take a break, tell me about this Mexican lager.
Okay, so Mexican lager, we call it Adios Bichachos.
Nice.
It's a fun logo.
It's fun.
He's got the big the hat on and the mask, of course. But again, this is a 100% Pilsner malt. A couple bags of flake corn in this one.
Okay.
Comes out about 5.2. This is probably more of our Modelo style, if I was to compare it to something especial. That's what I hear a lot from our customers. But easy drinking, same kind of regimen as far as, fermentation schedule. A lot of people put lime in it. I'm kind of fruit free, but whatever you want to do.
You got to offer it.
I'm not hating.
Yeah.
But I think this one does really well with the food too in the restaurant, especially kind of that Tex-Mex where we are. And people really enjoy it. I think
what's different about this on an ingredient and maybe fermentation side than the light lager?
I do this a little warmer, and the alcohol is about 5.2, and it's definitely got more corn.
What's the alcohol on the light lager?
3.5.
Oh, right. So this is about 5.2, and more corn.
More corn.
Because I do a little more sweetness.
It's sweetness. 5.2, about 18 IBUs. But I think both these beers are technically on the sweeter side. I mean, there's hops there to back it up, but I think just to be enjoyable, For the general public.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know, go with some food, especially some spicy food.
Definitely. Spicy pizza. I love a good Mexican lager. Like 21A El Sully, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of my
favorite
beers that they make. I will always buy that beer. We don't always have a Mexican lager on tap, but we always, I think, have two lager lines, and one of them we rotate Mexican lager. And I probably drink it more when it's a Mexican lager than say, an American light lager or even sometimes in a Pilsner. There's something about the sweetness that I just really like.
Yeah. I think, I mean, is it cloyingly sweet, too sweet? Or
no.
It's just like it's there, right? Like the corn's there. And
Yeah. If it were cloying, it wouldn't make you want another one, and then it's not good with spicy food. Right. It's like it's just enough sweetness to cover your palate while you drink it, then it disappears dry, and you just want to drink more.
And it's funny, this has been our number one. Like, we used to brew this, you know, for Cinco de Mayo, right? Like, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the logo came out. So, you know, in anything, 80% of it's the marketing.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah.
That's a big number. But, I think the logo really matches the beer, and people get excited about it. They laugh at the name. So that's been
fun.
Is
the logo on the can right there?
Yeah.
It is.
Here, let me put it
Get the big sombrero. Yeah, the mask. Skeleton.
Camera.
It's got our, you know, our kind of old Model T wheel in the eye. The funny thing is we want to take the mask off, right? So what's under that mask?
Oh, yes.
So that could be a whole
nother.
Well,
he's a skeleton. He's like.
It might be. I don't know. The
gold teeth.
The
skull. What's in there?
The eyebrow bones are furry, so it might not be a skeleton.
I don't know.
Is it a lime in his eye? It
could be.
Maybe he's got like one
wheel.
Gold tooth and one shot
There's
out.
A wheel. Okay.
Yeah.
I imagine a full Fu Manchu.
Oh, see, I was thinking that too.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well,
we'll ask Schumann.
You can play along. If you're listening to the podcast, you'll find this video on Facebook and YouTube.
We call it our quarantine edition.
Yeah.
So the logo came out when the mask came out. So
okay.
That's a fun one.
But our mask, so California dropped our mask mandate today, which
I
couldn't
ours,
be
I think,
happy
2 years
about.
Ago.
2 years. Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
That makes sense. We dropped ours in 2019.
It was in place for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we were done.
No, it's suggested, but yeah, there's no mandate. I think it's by county is what you find in a lot of places, which you probably find here. I know there's a state one as well.
But yeah.
It's definitely more by county. The governor is let the counties do, local governments do what they want to do.
Right.
And, you know, some counties are harder hit with cases versus others. And
yeah.
We just happen to live in a big metropolitan area, so we did kind of have a mandate, and the governor kind of pushed back. So I don't know. I don't know who you ask, but it's very political, right? So it's
everything, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I'm just happy it's gone. I walked out of my house today, walked into the bar without a mask on, and I felt so free.
Yeah. Nobody wears masks where we've been for a long time.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you want to, and that's fine. It's
your
choice.
Totally. Yeah, some of my staff, I think, still going to wear them. And
that's...
I've already had the goddamn thing, and, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, yeah. Doing the right thing, and it's for you.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Here we are locked away in this COVID studio. I mean, it's
yeah.
fine. Studio C now. We should just change the name. Studio C19. We should change the... All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to try more of Chad's beer from Bankhead Brewing. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Julian Trago from Beechwood Brewing, and you are listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
All right, welcome back to The Session, where Bevo and I are arguing about camera angles as we go on air. We're still here with Chad Mosier from Bankhead Brewing Company in Fort Worth and Rowlett, Texas.
Rowlett, close enough.
Rowlett. No, you guys are fancy out there.
You got to say it with a Texan accent.
Rowlett.
Yeah, I guess so. I own two cowboy hats now, Chad.
Ooh,
when
Stetsons?
One of them is custom made for
Ooh.
Me. I was going to buy the Stetson, and then I saw them making a hat, and I was like, what do I got to do for that? And he's like, well, first, you drink this Lone Star beer while you wait. no joke. And he's like, and then you tell us what kind of dip you want in the top, what kind of dip you want in the front. Like, I learned that they have names. Like, there's a donkey kick, and there's all these things. So one of them's custom, and the other I bought at some dumb store. I don't know, whatever.
So we have the Stetson factory 10 minutes from our house and the brewery.
Oh, is that right?
So I go to the outlet store.
How many Stetsons do you own?
Four.
So
you just embrace Texandom.
You must be aware.
Not all cowboy. So we have open road, like B.B. King style with the feather in it.
Oh, okay.
They make all kinds. They make like the, lack of a better description, the English kind of in the country driving hat.
Okay,
what do you call those?
I don't like a bowling hat. I don't know.
Yeah. They make them all. Fedoras.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just says Stetson on it, but it doesn't have to be a cowboy hat.
Okay, yeah. Then I'm going to, now that you're a Texan, I'm going to ask you what is a dumb question. So you know that at a certain time of year, you stop wearing a straw hat and you wear a felt hat.
Summertime is straw.
Right.
Because hot as balls down there.
Yeah. And then you switch to felt. And if you don't, if you wear a felt like in October, they know you're a dumbass tourist, basically.
Pretty much.
You're not from Texas.
Right. And then if you look on the inside of the hat where they put the X's, that's the quality. So if you have like 10 X's.
Yeah.
That's like how much beaver fur they used.
Okay.
Or how much fur went into it, right? Like,
right.
So it's funny learning all this stuff, but I love going to that store and just looking through all the stuff. And
so, yeah, I went into this tiny store like it was a mom and pop shop, and they were removing all the straw hats and putting up felt hats because it was that time of year. And he was trying to sell me a felt hat, but I didn't want a felt hat, you know? And he's like, no, hey, it's fine. I was like, look, I'm going back to California. Like, it's hot all the time. And they were super cool. Like, I had looked at 10 different hat shops, but these people, like, sold me. They were good, like, salespeople. It was probably the Lone Star. And anyway, he's like, yeah, it's fine, but, you know, probably just don't wear this hat, especially if you go to northern Texas. He's like, there, they care.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, the black hat is only for, like, dress up.
Oh, because right? That's what I was going to, if I did buy a felt.
Some days, like, your best, right?
I see,
There's rodeo hat, like, a certain crease is a rodeo, right? Like,
yeah.
And then they have the cowboy with the flipped up. Like, yeah, there's a whole thing.
Dude, I should have brought my hats today so you could critique me.
So you're living my best life.
Are the boots the same way? Because I'm all about cowboy boots, but I'm not knowledgeable.
So you have like roper boots. Then you have, you know, you have the raised boot, like the raised heel, low heel, round toe, square toe.
I have a raised heel. What's that called? Is that just a raised heel? I have the, they're like big old.
Then like, so are they rubber or are they leather on the bottom?
Because leather.
Okay, so those are dancing. So you can go dancing and cut it up on the...
Okay, hell that's what I have too.
I also learned a two-step while I was there.
Yeah. But if they're rubber, they're more like work boots. Like, you can't go dancing with those. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
No, you can't spin on
rubber.
It's
pretty funny. Like, you get corrected on all this stuff. It's
I love it.
And they're like, shoot dang, you can't wear those.
Shoot dang! What are you doing?
That's one of my favorite terms.
You left the house like that?
I need to move to Texas.
Yeah, that's you awesome. Do. Vivo, you'd love it.
Oh my God, that's funny.
One of my favorite ones, though, is like, what y'all drinking on? Like, what do you mean, what am I drinking on? I'm drinking on this. Like, I love it.
I like that a lot. I might adopt that.
Oh, it's fun.
I've already adopted y'all. Y'all should be universally adopted. I've said this on the air before. It's just so, it just makes sense.
It does.
Yeah, I like that one. All right. Let's talk more beer. We've got two more in our glass. One of them that's on tap. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, you brought us a beer called Cherry Hood.
Cherry Hood. So we do a beer called Low Hood, which is our triple.
Belgian triple style. Okay.
Yeah. You don't say triple in Texas.
No.
Yeah. I'd love to see you correcting your customers on that. They're like, what are you talking about? It's triple.
It's like the homebrew chef, you know, like Belgium's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giving them a hard time. No. But basically, it's... So we do three beers. So I start with our 530 Abbey Ale yeast from White Labs. And we do a Belgian blonde, about 6.5%, almost 7%. We pitch that into a Belgian triple, which turns out about 8.5%. And then we kind of end up with this Belgian dark strong, kind of in the vein of St. Bernard's 12 that gets the pitch from the triple. So we kind of take it through three generations that way. This ends up at like 9.5%.
Okay.
This was a collaboration this time around with a local brewery that just started up called Siren Rock in Rockwall. And we added a buttload of Oregon dark sweet cherries.
Oh, nice. Mm.
So definitely in the vein of like that same recipe that we've done in the past with the dark strong. But that cherry just kind of really changes things.
It does.
I like that this... Do you crash it down and put it in the very end?
We did. We did.
I like that.
You know, I think the cherries had some sweetness to it, but we don't package, right? So I'm not worried about like bottle bombs or can bombs. Everything's served by keg. Cool thing of this beer.
Cherries just into a steel tank?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, into the fermenter, right? Yeah. So, but we did rack off some of this beer into a used bourbon barrel, and that's the next beer we'll talk about afterwards. The beer came out of that bourbon barrel. We added this beer in there and added some tart cherries.
Okay.
And now it's just sitting there for, it's been sitting there for several months.
Nice.
So that'd be kind of two for one, right, out of this the same beer.
Heck yeah.
But St. Bernardus kind of Ab-12 is kind of a beer I just fell in love with, especially here, right, because you can find it readily available.
Yeah.
Down the street. And so it's got kind of the kitchen sink recipe to it. But a lot of Pilsner, Munich, Kara Munich, a little bit of Carafa Special too. This malt called Red X.
Red X.
Red X from, I want to say, can't think right. Best Malls.
What's unique about Red X?
It gives this red color to the beer. Okay. It's kind of Munich-y from what I've been told, with kind of that red hue, like bright red hue.
Yeah.
So that's something I haven't used before. But I just had all these half bags of stuff, you know, and I was like, I'm just going to make this beer instead of like the regular dark strong. And then we added cherries. So that's what you have.
It is a nice dark red hue.
Yeah, sometimes you'll make a beer like that, and it's like really amazing. And then you've got this crazy recipe that you just like.
We won't make it again, yeah.
You have to embrace it.
Mm. You know what I like most about it is that it's pretty low on the ester profile.
So,
because I'm just not a big Belgian fan when it gets too bubblegummy and all of that.
Absolutely.
You know, and some beers are great. Like you mentioned Ab-12, right? And that's a higher ester profile than this for me.
Sure.
And that one, I'm like two sips I can enjoy. And by the third, it's a little too much. But this one's a little less than that, I feel like.
Absolutely. And I think you hit right on it. With this yeast, we try to keep it low and slow.
Okay.
Again, pretty much crashed down to like 62 degrees with that Abbey Ale yeast. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was, you know, Vinny or Arnie at Marin Brewing Company, but I just remember this Abbey Ale yeast being brought up. And it gives off this dried fruit character without all the phenolics, right?
Yeah.
And if you keep it low, you know, that'll kind of keep all those phenolics down. You warm it up, right? You get more of that spicy, clovey, bubblegum, strawberry, banana thing, right? Which you don't, it's not bad. You just don't want a lot of.
And it
you
just, yeah, it depends on who, yeah. But dried fruit, that's where I'm at.
That's Absolutely. What I love. And that's what I love in our Belgian blonde. That's what I like in our triple. I don't want it to be that kind of fusely phenolic beer. And they can be spicy and phenolic and clovey and all that, but I just prefer more of that bright dry fruit. Like in the Belgian, it's more pear, right, and honey.
Yeah.
And this dark strong with the different darker malts, it just plays well, and you get that dry fruit.
Yeah.
And you throw the cherries in there, and then you really get that dried fruit.
Sure. Well, but it also it also brightens up the dried fruit.
Yeah. Right?
Like I used to talk, like back in the early days, when I just first started drinking cellared beers and stuff, I would always talk about like that kind of basement character that I really like, that a little musty and all of that. But over the years, I realized what I really like was dried fruit. And the older it is, that dried fruit changes, sometimes to this really great musty basement flavor, sometimes not so great. But if the dried fruit was never there, it'll age like shit.
Right.
It's kind of so this will be different. Do you bottle some for like your own library?
No,
just sell it.
Yeah. We should, but I mean, we just sell everything over the bar.
Let's get that Blickman beer gun going, man.
Just
for a few.
I have an extra one. I can send it to you.
There we go.
I've got like, you know,
wheeling and dealing
two at a time, you know, for like our holiday beers.
It's a pain in the ass.
It's fun.
Oh, painful.
Yeah.
It's What's the day. ABV on this Tripel?
This is dark strong, 9.5.
Oh, this is the dark
strong. 9.5.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I wish it had a little more carbonation, just picking on it right now out of the Crowler can, but
it's probably lost in the Crowler process.
Yeah, it's lively. I like them pumped up, right? Like, but I was going to go back to say, you know, that low temperature, it's very much like treating Hefeweizen, right? Mm. Hey, Hefeweizen.
Yeah. I had someone come in the other day and order the Hefeweizer, and I was like, that's still happening? I didn't make fun of the person, but she ordered it twice like that, and I was like, here's your Hefeweizer.
Right.
Anyway.
There's some great, like, you know, homebrewers that caught on to, like, fermenting low with that Hefeweizen strain, right? So you don't get that crazy, you know, bubblegum banana right over the top. It's more of that clove, spicy. There's a lot of other things at play, right? Your mash schedule and things like that for oak rest. But low and slow, 62 degrees with a Hef, you know, strain, you kind of don't develop all that big phenolic, that, or that big ester, fruit esters. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
And going back, yeah, you don't get like, you know, crazy esters out of this guy. You know, it's definitely not spicy either, you know, with that yeast strain, like a Hef. But low and slow, again, you can kind of keep some of those things that you know, back.
And this
rearing their ugly heads if you don't like that.
And how are your customers deal with this beer?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Is it? It's only on tap. You guys only basically have
only
draft beer.
Yeah.
What size glass do you serve it in?
And a snifter. Okay. A 10-ounce glass.
A 10-ounce snifter. Okay. Yeah. And do you allow people to take crowlers home?
Not of this beer.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have kind of a high alcohol limit for?
8.5%, you know, like our double IPA. That's a lot of beer.
Yeah.
In a 32-ounce crowler. So
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've probably drank a 9.5% beer in a crowler in my day at home by myself. But nothing ever goes well.
Right.
Right. So don't, it's better not to set. Plus, it's a cost thing, right? Like, you really want to stretch out that beer. You have less of it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I could see, like, some of your wine drinking customers just be like, oh, like, it's got so many of those flavors that are crossing over.
It's, yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's it.
Yeah. And then they have two. And they're like, God, why do I feel so good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, because we're cutting you off at two. That's why.
That's what the next beer will do to you.
So let's talk about that. And I want to tell me the beer name and style. And then I want to jump in with my experience with it first, because I have some questions to ask you about that.
Next one. So this beer we call it Liquid Language. You have too many, you'll be speaking a liquid language.
Okay, I get
you
it.
You can't really decipher.
Yeah.
The beer connoisseur version of tongues, maybe.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Woo! Oh, man.
So it's a, this is a 13% monster, loosely based on Parabola, which is probably one of my all-time favorites from Firestone Walker.
Yeah.
I think the big difference there is they use a lot of different barrels, and Matt's just a badass brewer, and I don't know if I can make the same beer. But no, that being said, lots of chocolate, lots of oats. It's kind of an imperial oatmeal stout, Russian imperial oatmeal stout.
Okay.
13%, like I said, big chocolate, big roast. Then we throw it in a barrel and let it sit for 3 to 4 months and used Woodford barrels. Everything bourbon is first use, right? So they dump it, they can't use it again.
Yeah.
Get it from a great vendor in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, we've gone as low as a month in the barrel, and we've gone as, you know, long as like 6 months. I haven't gotten too crazy beyond that. One, I don't have the space.
Okay.
And two, it really picks up a lot of that character. And I've used a lot of different barrels. I just seem to go back to the Woodford. It's just, Woodford's more of that sweeter kind of line of bourbon.
How long has it been in the barrel, this one?
This was 4 months.
Okay.
But really just rich and creamy too, being on nitrogen. This is also served on nitrogen.
Yeah.
I think I might like the carved up version better.
Okay.
Like when I enter in competition, because it's brighter. It's right there.
Well, I bet it tastes quite a bit different.
It does.
That nitro just brings the roast way down. It's like,
does.
You can tell it's there, but it's not, it's not as present.
And I think you get a lot of barrel character, but it's not super hot, you know, like some of these can be super hot without letting them mellow for a while, but I think this beer will get better, right?
Yeah.
If you let it mellow. I don't have the room to let that happen.
Sure. I don't think it's hot at all from the barrel. I do think that there's a lot of wood character.
Sure.
So it's tannic, which I like in my beer and my wine, by the way. I'm like, if you can throw a whole bunch of tannins in wine, and I'm totally good with it. The aftertaste is a lot of oak. On this one, the foretaste is everything you mentioned. Just a lot of that chocolate. There's vanilla in there that I get.
Coconut.
There's some coconut, which you didn't put in the beer, right?
No.
That's just coming out of that barrel. This is a great beer, but it's not, even as big as it is, it's not hot. It's a little, and I wonder if nitro affects that too, with the smoothness of nitro instead of like carbonic acid. Kind of keeping that down.
Probably.
But it's very smooth to drink. And so I guess the thing I wanted to ask you, because I actually don't know how CO2 versus nitro works from a brewer's perspective, because you offered us this beer and you said, do you want it CO2 or nitro? And we wanted it nitro. We needed our tap 21 to be. And I guess I just didn't realize that you can choose. Is it at the time that you keg it that you decide if it's nitro or CO2?
So the beauty of it is I don't blend these barrels back, right? They're usually barrel for barrel. So when we pull them out of a barrel, they go into a keg. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you can either nitrogenate that keg, right, after you get a cold.
Okay.
Or shake it and carb it, right?
I see.
It doesn't go in a tank and get carbed. So I can either do a blend of, you know, mostly nitrogen and CO2 just to get a little life in it. I can go 100% nitrogen if I want it super creamy, or we can just straight up carb it.
So when I said nitro, this was still sitting in a barrel the other day, and you put it into a keg?
It was in a keg.
You had, okay, you had some nitro and some already. Okay.
And you came to that fork on the road, and you had a decision to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you made that decision.
So it's like, well, any beer that ferments picks up a little bit of CO2.
Right.
So it's already got some carbonation.
Okay.
I mean, minimal. But then, yeah, you just, like, if you're going to make it a nitro beer,
yeah,
you can crank 30 PSI of nitrogen on it for some amount of time, and it will pick
the
up
nitrogen.
But nitrogen is, like, 100th or 1,000th as soluble in water as CO2. So even if you had some CO2 in there, like, all that nitrogen is like a very tiny amount of carbonation.
Okay.
So
right,
that's kind of like what the nitro tap is for, is to make all that nitrogen come out.
Got it.
So
the actual,
just
you mean
it,
the faucet itself is what that's
exactly
designed for. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a creamer plate, right? So it's a little plate inside that faucet and you're shoving it through there as quick as you can. And that's that cascading effect.
Yeah.
And the way we nitrogenate, so I'll take a keg, I'll put a keg coupler on it with a little blow off valve out of the gas side. And I go right through the serving side, right, of a spear,
mm-hmm,
and just blow nitrogen through the bottom of the keg and barely bleed it off for a couple hours.
Oh, okay.
Try to
well,
get
that's
as,
a cool idea.
Try to get it as cold as I can.
Yeah.
I think that was a Mitch Steele trick. I called him and asked him.
Okay.
And just try high pressure. You can't do it with cylinders. So if you have a nitrogen generator at your brewery, that's one way you can do it. It's a pain in the ass, one at a time.
I was going to say, so I made your life difficult for this event.
But that's how we do it anyway,
okay,
right? So
yeah,
we serve this on nitrogen all the time. But I think if I had a smaller tank that I had could really take a lot of pressure, I could do it a lot better. But a lot of my tanks, at least my Brights, are 15 PSI, right? They're serving tanks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I
well,
guess I
so
could.
We have a 30 PSI tank. But have you ever heard of the plop test?
Uh-uh.
So for nitrogenating a Bright tank, you can like just carbonate a little bit, carbonate to like 1.5, 1.8, and then jack the nitrogen in there and you just kind of let it blow off, just like you said.
Right.
And then you just keep taking a sample out the port and you just let it go and then you throw it on the ground and you wait for it to go bloop.
That's
really
the plop test.
Yeah, it's the plop test.
Until it bloops.
Until it bloops.
Let's try that. I'll try that.
I learned this from Galooly at Drake's.
Okay.
And
yeah,
I swear to you, it works
really
brilliantly.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it?
You it sounds dumb, but it really works.
Yeah, that's fun.
So what percent nitrogen is this beer? Because you said you can choose 70, 100. What did you choose
so
on this?
So typically like Guinness gas, right, is like either a 75, 25 or a 70, 30, right?
It's okay.
So more nitrogen than CO2.
Yeah.
This I think I did maybe a little blast of CO2 for a few minutes and then all nitro. So there's probably not much carbonation in there.
Yeah.
But the trick is really pushing it through that creamer plate and that faucet
right
at like 35 PSI.
So here's where I'd never mind throwing myself under the bus. So Chad actually helped me build my system here, but this
really
is not me throwing you under the bus.
No,
he helped me build it and then he left and I put all the beers on tap. So for 7 years, my nitro tap has been at 12 PSI, just like all my other taps. And Chad gets here and I go, yeah, we got your beer. This is today. And I pour a little and he's like, okay, yeah, like what PSI is it at? And I was like, I don't know, you know, we could look. And he's like, yeah, it's at 12, you know, it needs to be at like 30. And I was like, and I still like, you know, it's worked for us. So I'm like, well, you know, why don't we pour a little more and like see how it looks? He's like, okay. You know, Chad's always that. Chad's very diplomatic in his head. I know he's like this fucking guy. Fucking he's 17 years of the Brewing Network, and he doesn't know how to use his tap.
He's just laying out the cookies for to come around.
So he's like, okay, let's pour a little. You know, he poured, and he's like, yeah, all right, well, why don't I go adjust it a little bit? And he goes back, and he cranks it up as high as it'll go, which is 20-something. I might have to look into that, because I can't get it up to 30. So what had happened was, so for the folks of you at home, we poured it at my normal 12 PSI, and there basically was just no head. There's no creamy head. Now, I'll also admit, over the years, that's happened. We always have a nitro tap, and some of the beers have a nice, creamy, cascading head, and some don't. And I always just thought it was the beer, so I never thought much about it. Well, Chad goes back there, cranks the thing up, pours another glass, and it's fucking perfect. And it's cascading, and it's got head on it. And I'm like, fuck, it's been a long time that's been at 12 PSI.
You're welcome. No, you want that little show in the glass, right? It's sexy. Like, you see it kind of cascading up, that Guinness effect, right?
Yeah, I have to record that video every time it happens. Just like, oh.
Yeah. Right. So Chad just explained it to you.
Yeah.
You have to force the beer through that little filter thing.
The creamer plate.
The creamer plate. And you do that by a higher pressure. And now I know.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know. You.
See, Chad, still teaching me. You know. I may have gotten you your job, but you're still teaching me.
It's true. I will give you that. You know, like it was walking into that house. Changed my life.
I love it.
I will say that.
The student has become the teacher.
Absolutely.
That's right. Well, I think he became a teacher a long, long time ago, actually. He just doesn't know it, per se, but yeah.
I was actually just going to say, the Brewing Network teaching Justin for 17 years.
Yeah, that's more accurate than even my listeners, right? Yeah, teaching me for 17 years. Well, it is a delicious beer.
I like it. Yeah. I think it's tasting great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, man, you can't drink too much of it.
No. And I've got a long night, so I'm just going to sip.
It's kind of deadly because it doesn't taste
right
like 13%.
Trust
I mean
me,
substantial
it
beer, but it's not like
right.
It's very smooth.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chad, that is our time.
Perfect.
This time
for, no questions from the listeners.
For your interview.
I like it.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, you got off the hook for that. Our studio is no longer quite set up for that interaction, although we will fix that eventually.
Can I say something about Bevo being in a real closet versus just like pulling a curtain?
Yes.
I do appreciate that.
Right? Isn't that nice?
It's legit.
She appreciated it years ago, too. She was like, oh, thank God I'm not in the
seriously.
Same room with you guys.
Great.
She's got her own smells now.
Exactly.
Not the smells in here.
Yeah. I'm still cold, though. It still gets so cold in here.
You just run cold.
I do run cold.
I've only just recently accepted this as a great studio, to be honest with you. Even after, and I've been in it for 7 years. When Moscow was here, I went through this phase where I was really complaining about everything. And I was complaining about the studio, too. And he's like, oh, God, so fucking sorry that we were able to build you like a world-class professional studio. And I was like, yeah, I know, but I just kind of miss my sweaty fucking garage where things were a little rustic and jam bandy. You know
and
what I mean?
Dark.
But and dark and like, yeah, sweaty. And but you know
so
what?
So hot.
It's finally grown on me where this, I'm happy to be. Maybe it was COVID. Maybe like it just feels cleaner, right?
Like, yeah, you know, like the time away from it, it was like it made you appreciate things more.
It did. Like, for example, before the show today, I turned the air conditioner on for the first time in months, by the way. It's been winter here. I was like, you know,
feels
we're
going
to need AC today. And we didn't have that at the old studio. So, yeah, Bevo's got her own space. For the most part, the equipment works, you know.
That's why I don't drive old VWs anymore, to
my
chagrin.
How dare you.
I know you
bring that
still
up.
Get to experience that joy.
I did. I blew up the engine on my 4Runner.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Not fun. That not cheap. And then I'm like, okay, well, while this gets fixed, I'll just switch over to my bus. No problem. Starter goes out after 2 days. And it just reminds me, yeah, when the bus is my daily driver, it's a constant effort.
It's
much
a
like
challenge.
This equipment. Yeah.
Well, I will say this. I'm proud of you.
Thanks,
You've
buddy.
You stuck with it. We've had some late night talks.
Yeah.
Where it could have gone the other way, and I'm just, I'm happy you're here, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Happy to be
it's
back
a lot
in
of fun.
Here. Yeah. I'm still in it for a while, you know.
Good.
A couple weeks or something.
You're good at it. Keep it rolling.
Thanks, man. All right. Chad Mosier, ladies and gentlemen. Previously, the artist formerly known as Shat the Producer. And you can find him at Bankhead Brewing. Go to bankheadbrewing.com. They're both in Fort Worth and Rowlett, Texas. Oh. Go check out his beer. It's delicious. Tasty. Would be proud of you. You've come a long way. You've come into your own. You're your own brewer now. You have to mentor other brewers, I think, at this point.
Trying.
You know.
Just trying to keep up.
Yeah. Yeah.
The youngsters, the whippersnappers.
They're good, right?
Yeah. I was lucky enough to have Tasty come by and actually brew a couple beers, so
sweet.
That was awesome.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's great.
Yep.
That's
so
really
he made
great.
It. We did a big Texas barbecue
amazing.
Spin around with Randy.
Hell yeah.
It was fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, Chad will be on the next episode, too, which we're also doing tonight. For those of you podcast listeners, they'll probably publish a couple weeks apart. But we're going to do our Tasty Tribute show next right here from the Hop Grenade Studios as it's Tasty Night, a 21-tap salute. So hang in there for that. Teresa, we got a long night ahead of us, but we got some great brewers to interview.
I know. I really can't wait to see what happens, to be honest.
It's going
to
be fun. Chad gives us all his strongest beers to get us started.
I know. Yeah. There's going to be some dropping of trow. Not me.
Thank God I am in my own room.
Yes.
I know that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Listeners at home, you can guess who might lose their pants on the next episode of The Session. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our sponsor, More Beer. Go to morebeer.com and check them out. As always, they support us. Check out 21st Amendment Beers. Go to beersmith.com and download your free home brewing software. You get a 21-day free trial. It's amazing stuff. All right, folks. We'll see you next time right here on The Session.